So I guess I don't have to run out and get my Forlan TFC jersey, do I?
Well, not quite yet. I mean, it still might happen, Jeff. You know, from what I've heard, you know, I talked to sources last week and the two sides were talking, but that they were quite quite a distance apart on money in terms of salary. So there was quite a lot of work to do. And from what Forlan kind of came out and said in the Brazilian media today, he was saying it's one thing to say, you know, signing a contract. It's another when it's just been proposed. So I think that's where it is. There, this still might come off. But as I said, from the people that I've talked to behind the scenes, there was a lot of work to be done still. And he is under contract until 2015. So if TFC wanted him, not only would they have to probably match his salary down there, but they'd also have to pay his Brazilian club Internacional, you know, a hefty transfer fee.
What would be in this for Toronto FC? Tell people who are listening to this show who may not have followed Diego Forlan's career, or may in fact not follow soccer all that much, why this would be a good move for Toronto FC.
Well, he's a name. I mean, he's, you know, at the 2010 World Cup, he was the leading scorer for in the tournament with Uruguay, and he was also the tournament MVP. So he has pedigree. I mean, he's played for some of the biggest clubs in the world, at Manchester United and at Atletico Madrid and Villarreal in Spain. So and Inter Milan. So he has a pedigree and he's a proven goal scorer. I think there's a potential downside here in that he's, I think, 34, 35, and that perhaps his best days are behind him. So they wouldn't be getting a striker at the peak of his career. They'd be getting someone on the downward spiral. But then again, Marco de Valle was 36, 37 and is the leading scorer in MLS. Although they're kind of different players. I mean, Forlan is really someone who, relies on quality service, whereas De Valle can kind of make opportunities for himself. So it's not really that fair of a comparison, in my view.
Would Toronto FC use him as a pure striker? Would he be more a guy in the hole, that sort of a guy?
No, I think they'd use him as a striker. But that's, again, that kind of poses a bit of a problem because he's really a guy who feasts on quality service and you need to get the ball to him. So I'm not sure Toronto has anyone who can kind of provide that sort of distribution. I mean, Mateus Laba, the young Argentine that they recently signed, has looked good, but he's still a young player. So, I mean, but other than him, you know, I'm not sure it's necessarily a good fit just because of the kind of player he is and what TFC, you know, currently has and doesn't have.
Okay, we've got to talk about this. What the hell happened yesterday against Martinique?
Oh, don't get me started.
I need you to get started.
Okay. No, you know what, Jeff? It was, strictly embarrassing. I mean, you can't put a positive spin on it. You can't find silver linings. You can't sort of say, well, it was a young team and, you know, we were kind of expecting some hiccups along the way for Canada because they are in a rebuilding mode. All that's true about them being in a rebuilding mode and the young team, but they should have beaten Martinique. With all due respect to, you know, the tiny island from the Caribbean, this is a team that, Canada should have been all over. And yet, I think the main problem was they just, you know, it was interesting. Julian de Guzman said, you know, quite succinctly after the game is, you know, we didn't want it enough. And I find it troubling that, you know, a Canadian team coming off, you know, still that 8-1 loss to Honduras is still lingering that, you know, this is twice in 8 months now that they've just kind of phoned it in and gone out there as if, you know, a result was due to them and they didn't have to put in the requisite hard work. So that's a really troubling trend now. And it'll be interesting to see what, the new coach Benito Floro does and if he can eradicate some of that sort of mental attitude.
You know, it's we're joined by John Molinaro on the Jeff Blair Show. It's nice and, sort of an honorable thing to want to kind of blood some young players and bring new guys in and look to the future, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But do you think maybe Canada's maybe gone too much in that direction and maybe there still ought to be room for guys like Kevin McKenna?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, maybe not Kevin McKenna specifically, but...
Sure, I just...
I think your point is well taken. I do think there should be, some veterans in there. I mean, Patrice Bernier for the Montreal Impact, for me, is probably one of the best midfielders in MLS. And yet, you know, he wasn't brought up for this roster, the Gold Cup. Instead, they brought in Julian de Guzman, who's, you know, a pretty good player. But for me, I think Bernier is just a better player than de Guzman. And if you're going to – I'm all for blooding the young talent, and I think it's really important because you got to get these guys ready for the next round of World Cup qualifying, which is whatever, 3 or 4 years away. But it's, you also need sort of old hands there, right, to sort of mentor them and to bring them along. And I think a guy like Bernier, who, as I said, is just, I think he's an outstanding Canadian midfielder, it would have been really wise to have him there instead of just Julian de Guzman, who I think other than him and Lars Hirschfeld are the only guys who are over 30.
You know, John, obviously the Canadian Soccer Association making some news, signing Benito Floro as their coach. We can't really put ourselves inside his head, but what do you think went through his mind watching that? Because, you know, you pointed out on Twitter and in your story, the right team won yesterday. I mean, let's absolutely be honest, the right team won. That was a fair result.
Yeah, absolutely. What he's thinking, I don't think he's probably terribly that surprised, because he did watch some of Canada's World Cup qualifying games. And, you know, I'm sure he already knows about the 8-1 loss to Honduras. So I don't think he was terribly surprised. He was probably disappointed. You know, again, it was such a poor performance. And I think for me, that's the most troubling thing. I mean, the result, you know, you can throw up your hands and on the day, you can say if you're beaten by a better team, then fair enough. You can't have any complaints. But, you know, the performance was just so poor. It lacked urgency. It lacked motivation. They were just kind of sleepwalking out there. And fair play to Martinique. They fully deserved to win. But you have to wonder, you know, what would have happened if Canada had, you know, a little bit more inventiveness, if Colin Miller got his tactics a little bit more right and started some, you know, more attacking players and instead of being so cautious.
What did you make of the signing of Benito Floro?
I think it's a good signing. I mean, it's, you know, he's a coach who has, you know, coached all over the world at club level. You know, there's been some concerns raised by some about, well, he's never coached a national team, but I don't quite buy that, Jeff. I mean, you look at, you know, who won the last two World Cups? Marcello Lippi with Italy and Vicente Del Bosque. They never coached the national team before they joined those teams. So I don't think that's the issue. I do find it troubling that he's coached, I think, 16 different teams.
Yeah.
And he's only been at one spot for, you know, 2 or 3 years. So he has a bit of a track record of being a bit of a nomad and cutting and running. So I find that a little troubling, but you know, he's been out of work since last year, so I think he's got a point to prove, right? And, you know, everyone goes on about, well, he coached Real Madrid, but for me, the far more impressive thing about Benito Floro is what he did with this team called Albacete, who, when he took over, they were in the third division in Spain, and within 2 years, he got them promoted to La Liga. And that's what happened, and that's what alerted Real Madrid to him. So I think he has this talent for really getting blood from stones and really, you know, squeezing every inch of talent that he can from limited resources. And I think considering what he's got to work with his Canadian national team, that's exactly the type of coach they needed.
John, is he the type of guy, and I know we both talked to Victor Montaliani about this, but is he the type of guy who is looking, and again, I know I hate to ask you to go inside someone else's head, but do you think he's the type of guy who's looking for that sort of legacy aspect here as well? You know, the idea of leaving something better than when you took it over, because I mean, we've talked about this. Look, I know the CSA's got a ton of issues. Soccer in Canada has a ton of issues, but, you know, bottom line is there's a lot of people playing the sport here. Like, you really need somebody to grab it by the scruff and give it some direction. Do you think this might, that there might be an aspect of that in his thinking?
I think so. I think he sees this as a challenge. I think, you know, as I said, he's the kind of guy who has come into unsettled situations before and righted the ship. So I think, you know, that sort of legacy aspect that you talked about, I think that's a lot of that's what is driving this. And it's a new challenge for him. I'm sure cultural sort of reasons are at this as well. He's never sort of coached in Canada or the United States, so he might have wanted, you know, to experience a different lifestyle. And from what I understand, he's going to be domiciled in Toronto full time while he's here. So I think that was driving it. I think, as I said, there was a lot of different factors that he probably put into it. But I think first and foremost was the fact that, as I said, he's been out of work since last year. And, you know, this could be his last chance to really, just for personal reasons, to get his own legacy and sort of cement that. So I think it's Canada's legacy and his own personal legacy that he's thinking about.
We're joined by John Molinaro of Sportsnet on the Jeff Blair Show. We're broadcasting live from the Jays Care Foundation 18th Annual Charity Golf Classic at the club at Bond Head Baseball Central with Dirk Hayhurst and Sam Cosentino. just around the corner. Just before we let you go, I want to just shift back to the loss to Martinique. I mean, obviously, it's the first match of the Gold Cup for Canada. Where do they go from here in this competition? Because certainly the odds, I think the odds were long to begin with, but they certainly made their job more difficult, didn't they?
Yeah, well, absolutely. I think they're in a group with Panama and Mexico, who are two of the better teams in CONCACAF, and the thinking going into this before the tournament was that they're going to have to at least win one game to finish mm-hmm. third in the group and move on to the next round, and more than likely they would be able to beat Martinique, and that Panama and Mexico would give them a much harder time. So a victory there wasn't all that plausible. I think now it's probably even less more plausible. And it's important to remember Panama beat Mexico yesterday, and Canada plays Mexico next. So Mexico has really something to play for in its next game. So you have to think, if it was hard for Canada before against Mexico, who they historically struggle against, the Mexicans are really going to kind of come out and put the hammer down. So this doesn't bode well. They really have their work cut out, and I'll be really interested to see what kind of changes interim coach Colin Miller does, because I think he just got his tactics and his formation and some lineup changes spectacularly wrong yesterday.